I'm going to take out a Bible and turn to the book of Galatians. I told somebody that I have an aversion to pulpits, and I do. I do not like them because it makes me feel too much like a preacher or something. And I don't like to feel like that. I will tell you, I told someone that I wouldn't speak any more than 25 minutes, but you've got to give me 5 minutes of leeway here just to express my thanks to the congregation and talk about you for just a minute, because there's so many of you that have meant so much to April and I, and from the Burgles to Miss Linda, so many of you, and we don't get to see Susan as much anymore. We just miss her, and we're just so glad to be here because all of you are such a big part of us, and we appreciate you so much. It's good to see Bob and Mary. I don't get to see Bob and Mary that much anymore. If something ever happens to Ginger and Frankie, Bob and Mary are going to adopt me. So I'm glad I get to see them today. There are some things in your life that that those moments that you almost miss when you're in the moment. It's kind of like when you got married and you see your bride walking down the aisle. Or maybe when your children are born, you just miss those moments. You don't really stop and take it in, and you go back and you look and you think, wow, that was the most incredible thing. You know, I had been a part of people becoming Christians many times in my life, but this was my last trip to Mexico, and it was, when I go back and look at it and think about it, what it was, I love the ocean and the sea anyway, but that day was just such an incredible thing. The salty water and the beautiful scenery around us and the air blowing off the Caribbean Sea. It was just almost a surreal moment in my life, and I hope that I'll always remember it, and I hope that I'll always be thankful for that moment. You know, the lady's name that was baptized is Carmen. And one of the reasons I think that I like going to Mexico and other places in the world, because of the fact that the people are so real. And when I say real, I mean they're just not perfect in life. They're not people who have grown up in the church from the time that they first came onto this earth, and they had, went through school having nothing but Christian friends and having good experiences and never making any mistakes, and everything was great in their life. They become a Christian. They get married. They have 2.5 kids, a dog, and a white house with a picket fence, and everything's great in their life. You know, Carmen, she comes with baggage. Didn't have a perfect life. She had 2 kids. And then she got married. You know, but she's a Christian. She's forgiven, and I hope and pray the best for her. And when I got to Mexico that Friday night, we picked up from the airport and we literally walked into a house, put our bags down, and Paco said, "Come on, let's go. We're going to a Bible study." Didn't even sit down. Didn't even have time to wash the grime off your face. To change clothes and been traveling all day. And I go in, I sit down in this little hot, nasty room where it's stuffy and the fan's blowing and you're trying to move just to get in front of the fan. And a little kid comes up and just jumps up in my lap. Little girl named Esther. And, I'm sitting there trying to hold my Bible with one hand, keep up with what's going on, keep a hold on Esther and keep her halfway entertained with the other hand. And the girl sitting beside me, I didn't know. Turns out it was Carmen. The little girl was Carmen's first child. And we sat there, and after the Bible study, just got into a discussion about things, and she'd start telling me about her life and about what had been going on and all this stuff. And, and then you find out she's not a Christian, and then you find out that she wants to become a Christian, and then you find out that tomorrow when the sun comes up and she's going to change her life. And it's just one of those things that you just I really wish at that moment I could have hit a pause while, just so I could sit there and be in the moment for a little while. You know, Carmen, she's going to have troubles in her life. She's not going to have a perfect life from now on, even though she's a Christian, even though she's forgiven, even though it really doesn't matter that, you know, what she did in her previous life and the way that she, even though all that's gone and it's okay, she's not out of the woods yet. And that's what I want to talk to you a little bit about this morning. In the book of Galatians, what we find is Paul talking to a bunch of people who weren't out of the woods yet. A bunch of people who had problems, a bunch of people who had, some of them were already leaving the church and going back into their previous life. And what we find is that the same problems that Carmen's going to have in her life, the same issues and the same struggles and the same things, same things we run into today, same things that these people 2,000 years ago, the same issues that they had, the same that they transcended not only language barriers, but they also transcended time, space, and we really think sometimes that we've kind of got, we almost have a bias, so to speak. That because of, we say, well, you don't know what it's like to be a Christian today. You don't know what it's like to try to serve. Well, serving God is really the same now that it was 2,000 years ago. People have the same problems today that they always did. All of us know people that have left Lord, left the church. All of us know people that were once faithful and they're not anymore. And I'm going to tell you what. The same reasons that people left the church then, the same problems and the same struggles that Carmen's going to have, they're the same reasons that people leave the church today. And I want to look at those for just a few minutes with you. Turn to the book of Galatians. First three chapters in the book of Galatians are kind of theological. They're what you study when you take a theology class at a university or somewhere. They're what you really study and you really get into, and they create a lot of questions and a lot of issues, and they create just real thought in our lives. We're trying to figure things out. But when you get into the 4th, 5th, and 6th chapter, it's kind of where the rubber meets the road, and this is what's really going on in life. This is where what differentiates us from everybody else. When April and I first started dating, it didn't take me long to figure out that I really wanted to more or less put a brand on her. I wanted to kind of put a t-shirt on her that said, I belong to somebody else. I wanted to get her into that position where I knew that she didn't want anybody else. She wants me. I grew up in using different terminology, and I always talk about my kids courting, and they look at me like, what? Paul says here, chapter 4, let's begin back in verse 14. He says, my trial, which was in the flesh, you did not despise or reject, but you received me as an angel of God, even as Jesus Christ. For what then was the blessing you enjoyed? For I bear you witness that if possible, you would have plucked out your own eyes and given them to me. But have I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Now hold on just a second. I want you to realize what's going on. Paul is telling these people, he says, you guys really love me. You really care about me as a person. And he's going through this thing because of the fact that he's fixing to tell them, you got some issues in your life. And he says, are you going to call me your enemies because I tell you the truth? It's one of those things, sometimes we don't want to hear the truth about our lives. We don't want to hear what we really need to know because we think bad of people if they tell us what we really need to hear. And Paul jumps right in. He says, they, talking about the world here, zealously court you, but for no good, yes, they want to exclude you that you may be zealous for them. Now, turn over to Luke, the 22nd chapter. I want you to see something. Luke 22. When Paul says here, they zealously court you, the operative word is zealously. They're trying everything they can. And he's talking about the world. The world is trying everything they can to get you to come back to them. In Luke 22, this is talking about Judas. It says, so he went his way and he conferred with the chief priests and the captains how he might betray them. And they were glad and they agreed to give him money. And he promised and sought opportunity to betray him in the absence of the multitude. Judas, he had this conversation going with the scribes and the chief priests and all of the rulers of the synagogue and the Jews. And basically it went something like this. You guys really want to get this guy, Jesus. You really want to get rid of him because of what he's doing to y'all's system of religion. And I can help you with that. And they looked at him and said, really, what can you do for us? They said, well, I can give him to you. Okay, here's a question. You think he just dreamed this up in his mind? You think he just went to him one day and said, hey, I don't really like him, do you? You want me to help you? He knew something was going on. And he knew that there was an opportunity here, and he knew that they really needed him. And so he goes to them and they have this little conversation, and you know what? First thing you know, they're saying, hey, look, here's 30 pieces of silver. We'll give it to you if you'll deliver it to us. How hard does the world work to get us to come back? How hard is it for us to stay on the track that we're on? How hard is it for us to remain Christians? Is it difficult? Is it easy? How hard is it? Here's the thing. We look at people who fall. And sometimes we look at people like Carmen that have fallen. And we look at her because, and we kind of almost have this disdain for her because of the fact that she doesn't come in this nice little neat package with a bow on. That she has baggage and she's got a bag of rocks and she's got problems. We look at people like that and we think, ooh, is it really worth it? Let me ask you, how hard do you think the world is going to work to get her to go back? How hard do you think her old friends and her old companions, and how hard do you think the devil himself is going to work to try to get her back to where she once was, to the life that she once lived, to the place that she once was? I'm going to tell you. You see that word zealous? That means to try with everything you've got. I always tell this story to Rhett about this fellow that played football for Athens High School years ago. And I'm not going to call his name because some of you might know. But this guy, big, played defensive end, also played offensive line. He had great opportunity to be anything he wanted to be. He could be playing in the NFL today. He got a full scholarship to a Division I school. But I remember so vividly watching him play, and every time when they would change, when they would go from offense to defense, he was the last one out there on the field. He would just kind of lumber out there slowly. And then when time changed, he was the last one to get off the field. He was always late to practice. He was always, you know, trying to get by with doing as little weight as he could when they were in the weight room. And there's a guy that had more physical God-given ability than probably anybody else on the team, and yet gave less effort than anybody else on the team. So you know what happened when he did get a scholarship to a Division I school? He goes out there and he didn't play at all his freshman year. And you say, well, he was redshirted. No, he wasn't redshirted. The coach really wanted him to play, but he didn't have the effort. And he played a couple of downs the next year, the next year, the next year, and he got a degree from a Division I school. But he didn't give it at all. And I'm going to tell you something. The world is going to give it their all. Satan's not going to be the last one off the bench when it's time to fight against us. He's not going to lumber out there and half-heartedly tackle us. He's going to be the one that hits us with everything he's got. And we don't realize that. We have such a problem with people who fall. And we blame them and we say, well, you ought to know better. You ought to, it's the way you live, it's the way you, the choice you, well, okay, yeah, we have to bear some responsibility ourselves. But what we oftentimes forget is, this person is hammered every day with temptation and with problems and with issues. And we need to learn to look at them and maybe instead of criticizing them, maybe we need to say, come on, let me help you out a little bit. Because the world is really courting us to go back. Next reason is this. I was really afraid this morning in class you were going to steal my lesson. Chapter 5, verse 16. Paul says, I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary one to another, so that you are not doing the things that you wish. Doesn't it really remind you of the cartoons with the angel sitting on the shoulder and the devil on one shoulder, and they're fighting, and the angel's telling the coyote, you know, don't eat the roadrunner. And the devil is saying, yeah, it's a good meal. Go catch the roadrunner. Try it. It'll be good. Maybe it is that we just need to have a little reality break and check ourselves and just, maybe we need to admit something that we don't want to tell people. You know, when we're talking to somebody about becoming a Christian, we talk about how great the life is and how wonderful it is to be a child of God. And it is great and it is wonderful. I'm not discounting that at all. But maybe it is that we need to tell them this little bit of reality, and I'm going to clue you in on something. Okay? Sin is fun. Sin is something that you're going to want to do. Sin's something that Carmen's going to want to do. Even though she's a Christian now, even though she's gotten on the right track, even though things are going well in her life as far as I know, sin doesn't change. Sin has been attractive to people since the Garden of Eden. Why on earth do you think they ever ate that fruit? Because it was desirous to the eye. And they looked at it and they thought, it'll make me wise. So there's your revelation for today. That just because you're a Christian, just because you've changed your life, sin is still fun. It's still something there about that makes you want to sin, that makes you have this almost innate need to sin. If you look, turn over in your Bible to Romans chapter 7. You know, the Apostle Paul wrote more books in the New Testament than anybody else. He probably did more good, per se, than anyone else in the New Testament, with the exception of Jesus himself. But listen to what Paul says. Verse 14. We know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. So he comes out of the gate and admits that I'm still carnal. I'm still a person. I've still got this fleshly side. For what I'm doing, verse 15, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law, and that is good. But now it is no longer I who do it, but the sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good, I do not know. Or I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil that I will not to do, that I practice. Now, if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law that is present with me, the one who wills to do good, for I delight in the law of God according to the inward man. But I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. You see what Paul was saying? All those verses there, 14 through 23. He's saying that I don't understand why it is that I fall. He's saying I don't understand why it is that I've got in my mind exactly what I need to do. And yet when the rubber meets the road, I fall. You ever do that in your life? You ever look back at some bad mistake you made and you think, why did I do that? You look at some problem you've had with somebody and you kind of put your head in your hands and you say, why on earth did I say that? Why did I do that? Why did I fall? Why did I stumble? What in the world was I thinking? Here's the problem. You ever had somebody look at you and say, what were you thinking? Well, what's your answer? Probably, I have no clue what I was thinking. I have no clue why I did that. It just doesn't make sense because I look at it and I think, there's no way on earth. April asked me, we had been married, I don't know, a couple of months, I guess. And I'll never forget this. She asked me a question. She said, are you ever going to leave me or cheat on me? My first reaction was, what in the world? We've been married 2 months. What's wrong with you? That was my first reaction. I didn't say that. I thought about it for a minute, and I really wanted to say, no, I never will. But you know what I got to think? I sat there probably for 2 or 3 minutes, at least, before I ever answered. And she was really getting worried, let me tell you. She was looking at, why aren't you answering me? I said, give me a minute. I promise you, every man that has ever cheated on his wife, every woman who has ever been unfaithful to her husband, you were asking them that same question and say, no, I never will. Because I said it when we got married. I promised I would be faithful to it. I got to think, I thought, you know what? If I let my guard down and if I come out of the gate saying, I'll never do that, you know what? Look at what Paul said. He said, the very thing that I said I'll never do, that's exactly what happened to me. We have to keep our guard up and realize that we have no business saying, I'll never do that. There was this guy a couple of thousand years ago named Peter. Y'all remember him? You remember Jesus looked at Peter and said, you're going to deny me. He said, I will never do that. What are you, crazy? Look at me. I left my fishing business. I left everything that I had. I've been following you around being this itinerant Palestinian preacher for 3 years. And you think I'm going to leave you now? You think I'm going to turn my back on you? You are crazy. And just a few hours later, he's sitting there cursing, saying, I don't know this guy. I don't know who he is. So maybe we need to have a little reality check and realize that sin's fun. And the world's still going to call us. And there's still going to be this war going on in our members. There's still going to be this draw of sin that's fun and exciting, and it's something that we really want to do. And maybe we need to have just one more reality check. Look in chapter 6. Have you ever been really tired in your life? Just really exhausted? That you can't take another step? Now, some of you went to Mexico with me a couple of years ago and we worked on that church building down there. And what we didn't realize was that because it was really warm, there was no humidity. So we didn't sweat like we do here. And a lot of people, they were dropping like flies. I think the first day probably 5 or 6 people had to go back to the hotel because they were dehydrated because they weren't drinking enough water because they'd been working so hard and they literally, Jared says, okay, you got to take them back to the hotel, let them sit there, drink water all day long because something's got to give. You ever been that tired?
Paul says here, do not be deceived, verse 7, chapter 6. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. For he who sows the flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. If you are a Christian, I'm going to go ahead and tell you. The world's going to keep calling you. There's going to be this flesh and spirit type war going on. And you are going to get tired of doing good. You're going to get tired of saying no. You're going to get tired of saying, I can't go with you anymore. I'm sorry, I don't live out there. You're going to get tired of it. And you are going to get tired of doing good. I don't care who you are. I don't care how good you think you are. I don't care what family you were raised in. I don't care how much you say, oh, I enjoy being a Christian. It's so great. You're going to get tired of doing good. You're going to reach a point in your life that I am tired of this. I'm not sure where this saying originated. But someone said, no good deed goes unpunished. Yeah, you're going to feel like that in your life as a Christian. You're going to say, I keep doing good, I keep giving, I keep trying, I keep putting forth effort, and yet people keep criticizing me for it. You're going to look at it and you're going to say, I keep on, and yet, I'm just tired. You're going to get tired. You'll get tired, the world will keep calling you, the flesh will keep lusting against the Spirit. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to stand up and say, I will never give in. I'll never give up. I'll never stop. I'm always going to serve you, Lord. Think about Peter when you say stuff like that. Some of you know Phil Roberts. I asked Phil a few years ago. Talking to him, I said, you ever get tired of preaching? He said, every day. I said, well, then why do you keep on? Or how do you keep on? He said, well, I get up every day and I just do it for today. He said, I live one day at a time. And I say that just for today, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And I'm going to serve God just today, not worrying about tomorrow. And I got to thinking about it. And if you've ever read a book about Alcoholics Anonymous, that's one of the things that they say. Is that we live today. And don't worry about tomorrow. Don't worry about whether or not, you know, what temptation is going to come at us tomorrow or what the devil is going to throw at us or what's going to happen. Just worry about today and live today. And I think that's the key to living a Christian life. Is it to determine from right now on, today, I'm going to serve God. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to say no to the devil. I'm going to fight this battle that goes on in my flesh. And I'm going to take a deep breath. And I'm going to get a drink of water. And I'm going to get something to eat. And I'm going to be strong. And I'm going to go on. Because I'm not going to give up today. I'm not going to give up. So, let me ask you a question. Where are you in your life as a Christian? You say, well, I'm not even a Christian. Well, that's problem number one. Let's talk about that just a minute. Why aren't you? Why not? And maybe you say, well, I'm afraid that I can't do it for my whole life. Can you do it today? Maybe you say, I know that their temptations are going to come. That's exactly right. They are. Maybe you say, I've got all these friends and they're going to want me. And that's exactly right. They are. So tell me again, why aren't you a Christian? Why do you say no?
Jonathan Marks was here. And a couple of weeks ago, he and I went to Nashville with Hannah Ruth and Dyson. And we let Dyson drive. We were sitting in the back seat. Jonathan and I were having our own private little date. And we were back there and we got talking kind of. You just have a flashback because I don't know how many times when Hannah and Dyson were little, we took them to Nashville, drove that same stretch of road with them strapped in the car seat in the back seat. And look now, time flies. So, you look at your life and think about this. How fast has it gone by? How fast? You wake up one day and it's gone. I look back at myself and I think, oh, I have been married almost 25 years. And my parents have been married 23. Go figure that. It's scary, I know it. But you know what? It seems like yesterday that April and I were getting married. Seems like yesterday our children were born. It seems like yesterday we had all of these memories and did all of these things when our kids were little, and now look at them. And where does life go? Look at yourself. And here's another dose of reality for you. You're not getting any younger, and neither am I. And your life is rapidly coming to an end. I don't know how much time you've got on this earth. I don't know how much time I've got on this earth. But I know this for a fact. If you live 100 years, or if you live 10 years, and you miss, you miss heaven, your life has been an utter failure. And it is useless. If you miss heaven, you miss it. Don't look at yourself and say, I can't do it. I can't live that life for the next however many years. Don't look at yourself and don't worry about the world for the next however many years. Don't look at yourself and don't ever say, I'll never fall. I'll never sin. Don't say that. You just live your life today. Be a Christian just today. Serve God today. Because your goal is to live the best life you can and to serve Him until you get to the end of this life. Then you get to go home. Then you get to rest. Then you don't have to worry about people calling you names, and then you don't have to worry about people ridiculing you because you do good. Then you don't have to worry about the world and whether or not they're trying to pull you back. Then you don't have to worry about all the junk. You get to go to a better place and you get to get that reward. If you're not a Christian, you ask yourself, why not? If you are a Christian and you're having struggles, don't ask yourself why not. Why? As I just told you, why? The world will call you. The flesh will court you. You will get tired. That's why. But you know what the best part is? You be a Christian just today. And then tomorrow, you just be a Christian just tomorrow. And you'll make it. And you'll get to the end of this road. And you won't miss that at home. We can do anything for you. We can help you in any way. Come down to the front while we stand there.